Blog Talk Radio.
To another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. I want to thank everybody for all the great feedback and questions and everything that we've been getting on the show. As you know or don't know, if you want to find out more about the radio show, you can find out information on our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. I think if for the followers out there who've been watching the show, I think you've noticed a lot of new changes and some exciting things that have been coming up. As you know, myself and Pam, we've been doing the Thursday night time slot, which, of course, is the main time slot for the show. But we've been really excited because we have a number of new people who are actually doing their own shows every week under the Spiritual Connections Radio brand, which is nice. We have Pam, who's doing a show on Monday nights, and my friend Brigitte and Mike are now doing a monthly show with Ascended Masters. And we'll have some exciting news up on the website because we have another four or five people lined up who are going to be launching shows, including the show that's going to be aired in German with one of my friends out of Germany. So all kinds of great, exciting things coming our way just to bring a whole bunch of light workers to you so that you can learn about different things in different areas, you know, that's coming up this year. So thanks for all your great feedback, and I hope everybody's been enjoying the radio show. And with that, I want to introduce my co-host, Pam. Are you there?
I'm here, very, very much here, in mid-Florida, close to Tampa, but I'm on the phone, and it's a nice evening, so I'm happy to be here.
You know, Pam, before you introduce your guests, why don't you, you know, talk to people about this new radio show that you have that's running every Monday now?
Well, thanks, Mark. I don't want to take too much of our time because I want to get right to Carrie as soon as we can. But I do want to say that Monday evenings at 8 o'clock, the radio show is called Secrets of the Soul. And it's funny because I just had a brief conversation with Carrie Stokes, our guest tonight, and he had a radio show that sounds very similar. We do some, we do call-ins. Evening next Monday night is about mental viruses and mass consciousness, and we talk about how to feel better about yourself and not tune into that vibration. It's really a fascinating show, and I would love everyone to listen.
That's
so
great.
Thank
you.
I'm sticking to it.
All right, go ahead and introduce our guest.
Okay. Tonight, we have a very exciting guest. I talked to him for a few minutes before the show, and I really like him. His name is Carrie Stokes. He's a Native American in lineage and in heart. He's certified as a master practitioner of energy medicine and a recognized shamanic teacher in the U.S. and abroad, co-founder of the Medicine Way University. He's a lecturer. He leads workshops, and I'll let him tell you more about himself. Carrie, are you there?
I'm here. Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for being on. We really are excited about your presence here tonight.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor.
Thanks. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Let's just start with an open-ended question.
Oh, about myself. Well, that's That's a couple hour show, I think. No, or maybe it's a short one.
Sounds good.
Maybe it's a five second.
We'll go and do it.
Well, in the work that I'm doing now, I mean, basically, I've been kind of in a nutshell. I've been training with the indigenous cultures. It's always been an interest of mine, and I just in the last decade or so kind of dove back in very deeply, and I work primarily with the Pacos, the Andean mountain shamans from the Quero Nation in Peru, and with in North America with the Lakota and some Iroquois and Seminole and like that, you know, some Native American people here in the United States. And I consider them wisdom keepers. Some are elders, some are wisdom keepers because they don't consider themselves an elder until they reach a certain age. But by all means, they're wisdom keepers, and they're keepers of a prophecy, and also, most importantly, I believe, a body of processes, which is these old ancient ways that keep, keep us alive in a good way and in balance and harmony with, you know, the earth and with life, you know, all life energies. So this has been my passion to follow for my own personal practice. And then through that, I've been, helping to share that medicine, just like you guys are doing your work and others out there listening and doing their work, and just sharing whatever little wisdom or knowledge that I have that I can pass on to others, and hopefully, that way of being of service. And we also lead group retreats. I take people over to Peru, and we do sacred ceremonies and rites and initiation and go to ancient sites. And then also in South Dakota, I do a journey with a good friend of mine, Kevin Locke, who's a full-blooded Lakota. And we do pilgrimages up to sacred sites where, well-known past chiefs like Red Cloud, Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, where these people would go in pilgrims and do prayers and ceremony and basically to give people a true, authentic experience instead of like a... instead of something instead of more like a touristic-y kind of thing, you know, we get really into the land and into the spiritual part of that, and of course there's always history shared, and whether it's Peru or here in North America like that.
How wonderful.
Can you tell us how you got started? Like, were you gifted as a child, or what was your journey like?
Oh, interesting question. Well, I guess I always heard about it in my family that we had, you know, not like every day or anything, but just, you know, periodically a family gathering. You'd hear talk about there was some connection in our family with Native American. I didn't really know a lot about it, and then found out through my mother's side there was a connection there, and then saw a picture of my great-great-grandmother who's, you know, really looks... My mother didn't look... I guess if you saw her, she had high cheekbones and a really striking kind of nose. But other than that, she was blonde hair and blue-eyed. But if you saw a picture of my great-great-grandmother, you'd say, oh, yeah, she definitely looks, indigenous person. And so that's part of that was always an interest of mine. And I was always open to a lot of things. I think I was blessed to have my mother was very open in regards to not attached to any religion or anything. She always accepted people from all different walks of life. So I was always kind of, we're all products of our parents, right, on some level. So I was always exposed to that. And so I felt guided to look at other things. So I started in Buddhist philosophy, was interesting to me. And then went on to, yoga, which kind of tied in there, and, meditation. And then one day I just had some change in my life where I guess what I call the waking up period, maybe 3 decades ago, and it came from a split up of a relationship, and, which oftentimes I think all these things happen to launch us in different, spirit always knows, I believe, and launch us in certain areas of our life. And long and short of it, I ran into a gentleman who named Ed McCaw, Ed Eagleman actually is his name. He's actually a direct descendant from Black Elk, and I feel fortunate that I just ran into him and then had my first Inipi ceremony, which is a Native American, they call them sweat lodge, but they're really purification lodges. There, it's, I mean, you sweat in there, of course, but the idea is about to purify and cleanse and to pray and to, you know, give offerings to you know, great spirit, great mystery, like that. And so that's kind of what launched it. And then from there, just, you know, like everything, I think for all of us, just things, synchronicity, things came across my path. And where I got into with the Andean shamans was I got some information in the mail, and my son, I was going to take him on a kind of what I call a rites of passage. We always did a father-son thing on the summer, and that year he was like 12 turning 13 or 13 turning 14. It was one of those years. I don't remember exactly at the moment, but he, I wanted to do something a little more meat and potatoes with him. And so this opportunity came up to working with these shamans because they were going to be at Machu Picchu on the day of my son's birthday. So I just said, okay, that's, you know, I look for little signs, or I'm open to little signs like that. So I said, okay, good, I'll do that. So at any rate, I went over there, and then one of the shamans who were there said, oh, you're going to be doing this work and teaching this work. And I was like, thank you, but no thank you. I don't really see myself doing that. And lo and behold, about 6 months later, I was introduced to another class. And once I did that, I think we've all had those aha moments where I just went, wow, this feels at home. You know, I just felt really, really, just like the first time I walked crawled into the lodge, I just said, wow, this is home for me. You know, some part of my being, my essence, has experienced this before, and so it just felt right. So I just feel at some level it's that remembering and reliving it on like that. So I just feel very blessed to have had that opportunity. And as far as gifts, there was, when I got married, my wife and I took her up to a mediumship class with a very well-known medium, and I didn't know anything about that, and I just took her because she's always been very intuitive and had that gift and talked to spirits. So I just did it. It was our anniversary, so I thought, well, you know, that would be a cool thing to do for our anniversary. And during the class, I found out I was able to communicate with spirits, and just through we were doing an exercise, a gal and I across from each other reading that psychometry where you're holding an object, and all these things started coming to me. And as I gave them out there, it was very profound for her and very healing. And I found that I had that gift. So as far as gifts, that's the only one, I guess, that I stumbled across where I said, oh, wow, I didn't know I could commune that way with spirit.
How wonderful.
If I remember correctly, Carrie, that's actually where I met you and your wife for the first time.
That was after, though. It was a couple years before that. But then we got deeper, and we went to the more advanced class, and that's where I met you, yeah.
Yeah. So it's amazing to just see how spirit brings people together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny because we connected, and now we've been friends here for many years now. So we connected there, and, you know, out of a room of what? How many people? Like 300 people, and, you know, connected with maybe, you know, people we still talk to, two or three. So, yeah, it's always divine guidance. As a matter of fact, we recently ran into a woman who, we're looking at each other, we're going like, we know you. She goes, and we finally put it together after all through dinner, and then we go, oh, is that same conference, the one we met at? So it was so funny.
Wow, yeah, that's really something. So why don't you talk about your wife just for a minute and the work that she does. She's actually going to be on our show on the 21st, so we're looking forward to having her on. But, talk about, because I know you two kind of collaborate on a lot of project work.
Yeah, my wife, thank you. Yeah, she's an awesome person. I feel very blessed. It's interesting that neither one of us kind of knew that we were doing this work. We weren't really doing it so deeply, probably other than our own personal work. And then together it kind of, I guess, flourished. But she's always been an amazing intuitive, used to see visions since she was a little girl. I actually used to pray, ask God to take him away because she didn't want to see all this prophecy. She'd see things that would happen in the future, and it came true and things like that, and she didn't want to. She felt responsible. You know, you're young and you don't understand it, and then later on she realized it was a gift of hers and actually could use it for the benefit of people. But, she's amazing, and she really connects and lives in that kind of upper realm. I kind of, even though I believe it's all connected, I mean, she obviously, you know, works with the earth part, but I think together I'm kind of more grounded in the earth and she's kind of more in the ethers. So as a team it works pretty good. We teach a lot of workshops and things. We have one coming up here March 23rd that we're going to be doing about connecting, finding your soulmate with the help of your angels. And at any rate, that's she's really, really amazing that way, and really puts herself out there to dedicate herself to helping people, and it's been a great journey to have that support, because I meet a lot of people along the way who one or the other are doing something, but it's nice to have working together like that with the same common goal.
Yeah. We'll actually repeat this later on, but, why don't you go ahead and give out your website so people can find out about that event you have coming up in March, but also about your future events, because I know you do quite a few events inside the country and you do some outside of the country.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, well, I have two websites, one that is Medicine and then Wind, like WIND, warrior.com. That's actually a translation of the name I got in Lodge through Ed. And that's my native name, Medicine Wind Warrior. And so that's one. And then a very good friend of mine did another site who's very close in this conversation here, helped me with another site, which is carriestokes.com. But I haven't totally launched that one because I'm adding more things, but it's more a more polished site. So most of the information is more updated right now is on Medicine Wind Warrior, but also be up on Carrie Stokes, which is Carey and then Stokes.com. And then Elsa's, if anybody's interested, is linked right there, and that's angelhealingwings.com, and you can read everything that you need to there if you like.
So when is that workshop coming up, and where are you going to be holding that?
That one's coming up March 23rd. It's right here at the Renaissance in Fort Lauderdale. It's only $25. We do a range of different things depending on what it is, and also sometimes we just do free things or really low price things to be a service to help people, the best we can. It's also online as well, so you don't have to even be in Fort Lauderdale. So anybody's listening and would like to tune in, it's just $25. It's going to be via an online and also in person.
Wow, that's really neat. And you said that's basically using your angels to help find a soulmate?
Yeah, it's finding your soulmate with the help of your angels, and there's going to be different techniques. There's a whole array of things that she has planned. A lot of times my wife does these things. She channels so much information, and sometimes it's even the things we talk about presenting maybe 4 or 5 days before. The night before, she'll go, I'll look over in the bed and she's not there at 2-3 in the morning. And she's go in the living room, she's out there, and I see her in meditation, and she's just channeling all kind. Next morning, she goes, "Oh, well, they told me to do this now, and do this, and do this, and do this." And I'm like, "Okay, all right, I'm with you. Let's go."
Wow.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, it was one of the frustrations I had with one of the spiritual teachers I had been following for a number of years, and that is, you would go and you'd see on the advertisement, okay, go to this conference this weekend and you're going to learn X, Y, and Z. And you would get there and you'd only get X, and Y and Z wasn't even discussed, but you'd see all these other things unfolding. And there's a lot of frustration there until you finally realize that a lot of the good teachers and what they do will actually channel and will actually teach from a channeling point where they're actually channeling information. So, what you said about your wife and how all of a sudden at the last minute spirit will say, you know what, I want these things taught, and we're going to go off in a different direction here a little bit. I think that's probably some of the ways some of the best teachings come across, versus, do we really want to just learn something that someone's teaching off the top of their head? I mean, there is, I think, some good room for tradition and certain types of techniques being taught and stuff, but, I think a lot of the great teachings come through as pure channels.
Yeah, very, very well said, Mark. I mean, because that, in the beginning when we first started doing these things, I was a little more like that. I like sometimes a little more structure, and she would just say, go with me. And then I realized that it was like my control thing. And if Spirit's telling you that, then, yeah, by all means, especially when we first started putting ourselves out to the public. I mean, sometimes she would wake up and say, matter of fact, our very first expo, it was like 3 days out for this big expo here in Fort Lauderdale. It's not here anymore. It must have been, I don't know how many years ago, but it's no longer exists. But she said, oh, Spirit told me we're doing this expo, and we have to get a booth and get in. I'm like, what are you talking about? I got meetings planned, and I'm going to be heading out of town. And I said, okay, because I know what she gets is, but it was a little bit of a challenge for me because I wanted more structure, and lo and behold, that was a huge launch for us, and Matter of fact, we still have some students that we met way back when that are still with us. And some have, manifested some very good friendships. And so it's like that, just following in that guided place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
can I jump in here for just a minute? I'd like to take the conversation in a little bit of a different direction, if you don't mind. Mark, do you mind? Can I ask a question here?
Well, let me finish my sentence here on this one thing, and then I'll let you run. What I was going to mention is, I've had a chance to actually take some classes from Pamela, who's on with us today. And what's very interesting with her is that she actually channels for most of her classes, and it's just amazing to see the information that comes through. I mean, Pam is actually a very good teacher and teaches a number of lectures that people can actually find out more about her, and she'll mention that on Monday on her radio show about her website and how you can find out about some of the lectures she's doing. But, Pamela actually is a very incredible teacher also.
Wow, that was a very sweet thing to say. Now I feel bad about interrupting you. Well, thank you, Mark. Carrie, what I wanted to talk to you about, I have a background in what you're doing as well, and there's so many questions because I very seldom have a chance to talk to someone that has the kind of training and interest that you have. So what I want to know about is, have you done any dream work, number one?
Hmm.
Lucid dreaming. Waking up within your dream, that sort of thing.
Yes. Am I waiting for a second question, or this one, the first one?
That's the first one.
That's the first one. Okay. You going to give me a few, or do you want me to just answer this one first?
Go ahead and take that one first.
Okay. It's funny you said that, because I just had a really interesting dream last night that I got up in the morning. Sometimes my wife will sit in the morning and for meditation, and we'll share like our dreams. And we had we were trying to figure out who gave who what, because we had the same type of dream. So we're like, well, you must have given me that dream, because I was dreaming something else, and then all of a sudden this showed up. And so as far as dream work, like studying that, from at least some of the elders I talked to, they talk about being in sacred time, which is that time, linear time in this world travels like cause and effect. What happened behind you can't change, and what's out in front you don't know. And this is like travels like an arrow, right? This is our way of Western thinking. And the place of sacred time is a place where all the indigenous people, or I shouldn't say just indigenous, but the medicine people knew, those healers, they knew 40, 50,000 years ago that you can travel. Time loops onto itself like a wheel, so therefore you can go back in time and look at an original wounding and shift that, or like have soul retrieval, for example, that could go back many, many lifetimes. Or you can reach out in front and set out for the destiny line and find out what's happening there and have it like a giant hand reaching back for you, pulling you forward to your destiny. And this is that place where you're in that sacred time. So they also speak about dream time. There's no difference between dream time. It's another parallel universe. And this is, I guess a belief system. It can be controversial. I don't really know. There's certain things I know just happen as experiential. But to tell you, like, this is for everybody, or this is really what it is, I believe I'd be remiss, because who knows? It's like saying what happens when you go to spirit world. There's all different things, from the Buddhists talking about the Bardo planes to, I know from the Andeans talk about going through different steps, and you've talked to somebody in Catholicism, they'll tell you something different. So who really knows? I do know there's something over there, because I've spoken to spirits over there. I've channeled things through, and for a client in Russian once early on, I was like, I don't know what this means, but I'm going to say it anyway because spirit's telling me. And they go, oh, yeah, that's his sister's name, or she's telling, okay, well. So I didn't understand it. So there's been proof there with that for me about the other side. So to answer your question about dream time, I know people, actually a good friend of mine is doing some training about going deeper and studying what that means. I have heard stories like, the symbology there, the symbolic nature, like could mean something. Let's say you were trying to quit smoking, and I did hear this story, for example, I use it for you, where a gentleman then he found himself stuck in the mud, and there was an alligator coming up to him and trying to coax him out, and then he interpreted as it was like being stuck was being stuck to the addiction of the tar and nicotine, and the alligator was there to either devour him or to pull him out. You know, it was his choice. So you know, that was his interpretation of the dream. I hope that answered your question. I don't know a lot about that. I do believe that it's remiss if someone tries to interpret, and this is, again, my belief, that someone tries to interpret your dream for you, because I always believe that our soul knows more than anybody else can really ever give us information on, that if we just open up and trust that.
I agree with that. That was a good answer. I really just wanted to know if you had done any work with lucid dreaming, like waking up within the dream. And you answered it. It was a good answer.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about soul retrieval, because soul retrieval is an important aspect of Indian belief systems and culture. And although I know about it, I'd like you to explain it to our audience, because I'm sure you could do a better job than I can.
Well, in my training, I've read and heard other people can do it in a different way, but ultimately, and this is also for your listeners to know, that shamanism, A, is not a religion. It's also, from what I know of it, it's linear, right? So it's all linear. It's not a hierarchy of any way. So I believe, and from what I know from my own experiences, from that whether it's somebody who is from Russia doing a Russian shaman, or some Native American people don't even use the word shaman. They don't believe in it. They think it's a whole different connotation, but they talk about medicine people, medicine men and women. And so that this is across the board is the same type of thing. They're all doing soul retrieval, right? But the art form of it might be a little bit different. That's the point I'm trying to make. So the art form might be a little bit different on how they do it. Even if you and I had the same training, you might have a little skill set that does it a little bit different than I would do it. But the basic premise that I know and the way I do it is that they're first of all, let's talk about why soul loss happens. Because somebody's out there listening, like, what is that? So soul loss happens when the world becomes unsafe, when there's some kind of trauma in our life and the world becomes unsafe. So there's a piece of our soul will flee. And they've proven it now in quantum physics that, just like I talked about that sacred time, that time loops back onto a wheel, or like a figure eight, it's ongoing like infinity. They've proven in quantum physics now that soul loss is actually a quanta piece of energy. So as a practitioner, I'm going to, a client's coming to me and they need soul retrieval, I'm going to journey by going into an altered state, which is either through a drum typically, or a rattle, or I like to drum. Sometimes I use a rattle if that's all I have, or even some chanting, some kind of percussion or chanting to take you in that altered state. And so therefore you journey back into time, see what's going on, and you go into the underworld, which is, in the beginning I had a problem with that because I had a little bit of, when I was raised, the Catholic thing, you know, you hear about underworld, all that, you know, like fire and that brimstone stuff. But
right.
I understood more in the shamanic traditions, or in the medicine way traditions, that the underworld is the beauty, is the place of the soul, is the place of the earth. So they never, that's why the indigenous cultures are a lot, they didn't understand when they talked about hell, because they said, how can anything be in the belly of the mother? Anything could be bad, because the mother earth is what sustains us. The mother earth grows, you know, provides us with corn, with water, with, you know, with all this beauty. And so everything comes from her belly. So typically, when we have soul loss, that's where it goes. It goes, journeys down back into the belly of the mother, okay? And what that means is that piece that leaves, it's that part of us that stayed in the state of grace, that innocence, part of us flees. So what that typically happens is, when that happens, is that it'll derail our destiny. Because when we have a trauma that happens, right? And it can be, when I say trauma, it could be something very obvious, you know, like some physical or verbal abuse. But it could be, remember, it's just when the world becomes unsafe. So it could be, and I use this example sometimes in class, that let's say you're a little baby, you're 2, 3 years old, your parents want to go to the movies, you're asleep, they take you over to the house, they drop you at their best friend's, who they trust with their child, right? you don't know their best friend. You're a little child. They go to the movies. You wake up in somebody's strange house with strange people looking at you. All of a sudden, when you're a little child, your world just became unsafe. Where are my mm-hmm. parents? Where's my mom? Where's my dad? That can be a shock enough for you to have soul loss. So I like to use that example because obviously the obvious things, you know, it could be also from a car accident. So when I say trauma, it could be something like that or physical abuse or something that's obvious. But it could be this other scenario I just gave you, which is, you know, it wasn't, if we were on the outside looking in, you just, it wasn't your parents abandoned you or left, you know, but they just wanted to go get some free time for themselves to relax. But to you,
right.
your world just got shaken up. So,
right.
Okay, so
let me
get
ask you a question, if you
yeah.
don't mind me interrupting at this point,
sure.
Because I find it so fascinating. Say, for example, you are at war, and you just came back from Iraq, because I know that there's many, many of us that have suffered post-traumatic stress disorder because
right.
of different things. Now, my training is that if someone leaves a place where they don't ever want to even remember it anymore, there is so much resistance and so much pain involved in like a period of time when you were in this war, and you come back, it's almost like you leave a piece of yourself in the form of an animal. And it reminded me of it when you were talking about the dream with the alligator. Because my training is that that piece of your soul manifests itself like either a wolf or a panther, and then the person comes back here and is feeling safe again, but is not a whole person anymore. And every time they go to sleep, it feels like that wolf is trying to rip their throat out or trying to go after them, when in truth, it's trying to reunite with the soul. What do you think about that? And can you give our listeners that have suffered from this particular issue any sort of tip to help them?
Well, for sure, there's been some soul loss. You've been into some service. Well, let me finish answering your first question. I know I probably jumped around, but I was trying to make the point. But let me tell you how it's done, how it works, and this is how.
Okay.
So when this soul piece, I'll make a shorter version of it because I know sometimes I can ramble. So when your soul piece goes, let's say you had the trauma, you had it. Goes to the belly of the mother. So
mm-hmm.
when you're journeyed down there, there's four chambers of the soul, just like there's four chambers of the heart. There's the chamber
okay.
of there's chamber of wounds, there's the chamber of contracts, there's the chamber of grace, that's where the soul always remained in its innocence, and then there's a chamber of gifts. So what I was getting at earlier is also when you have that trauma, when it derails your destiny, you enter into a new contract. Okay, so what does that mean, Carrie? I'm going to explain this way. So I'm going to use the example that most people would relate to. Let's say there's a child and they're having some in a family situation where they're either physically or verbally being abused, and you've heard of the fight or flight syndrome, right? Okay.
Right.
And most people, okay, you're too little to run, you're too little to fight. So the world becomes unsafe. They have soul loss. And what happens is they enter into a new contract. Let's say their contract, when they were born, their contract was, okay, I'm going to be a big voice in the world. You know, God has given me life, and I'm going to be a big voice in the world and make a difference in the world. Now they're born into this family situation. They have this soul loss. So they have to enter into a contract that says, well, if I just keep quiet, I won't be hit, or I won't be bothered, or I'll be out of the way. If I just stay quiet, or if I just stay out of the way. So now they entered into that contract to keep themselves protected. It's a survival technique,
right.
But that's not their true contract. Okay, so when I journey down on for a client, first I go in the chamber of wounds to see what happened. The wound is a wound is a wound. Sometimes it could be version number 47 of something happened 10 lifetimes ago, because it's repetitive. Okay, so I'm not too wrapped up into what the wound. I'm not getting into the story about it. I just want to see what happened. It gives me some information. I'm tracking information. So then when I go into the chamber of contracts, I can see, okay, here's the wound and here's the contract. So we find that non-serving contract that they entered into. So we get rid of that. We dissolve it. We burn it. We tear it up, whatever it needs to be to destroy that contract. The client has to write a new contract, a serving contract But they can't do that until they've recovered their soul peace, okay? So then we go into the chamber of grace. In that chamber of grace, I see where the what's going on there. You know, typically it is some little, a little one, a little child, a little girl, a little boy, and there's, it's very important also what the scene is there. Maybe it's a little girl in a meadow with mountains around. So there's other parts in that, because really, truly, what the underworld is our subconscious mind. That's truly what it is. When they talk about journeying to the underworld, it's really journeying to the subconscious mind. And so you're, there's other symbology represents something there as well, but it's not for me to determine. That the client will always know exactly what it is for them. So you negotiate that little soul piece to come back, because sometimes, most of the time, they're like, oh, thank God you found me. I've been waiting for somebody to come back and get me. And sometimes, though, it's not ready to come back. Because let's say that person, let's take it, flip it to a more, let's say, an adult situation, and someone's an alcoholic, and they're still abusing themselves through alcohol. Well, the soul piece going, why am I going to come back? That person hasn't done anything to change their life. That's why I left in the first place. That could be an example. So you have to negotiate on the part of that person to bring that soul piece back. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have to make major shifts in their lives. So let's go back and stick with the scenario of the little child. So when you get that from the state of grace, you bring that soul piece back. Then you go into the chamber of gifts to find out what it is that the gift for them to come back in their life. Now, again, it's not for me to interpret. I'm just there to retrieve. So let's say, for example, I find a jump rope there in that chamber. Well, I'm not going to come back. So, you know, spirits tell me you need to exercise. That's not, the person will all know right away. It might mean they need to play more in their life. Okay, so then when you gather the soul piece and the gift, and then you come back to return back to the middle world, a power animal returns back with you. And they journey back together. And why the power animal? The power animal is to reset the person's instincts. They need whatever it is that power animal represents. And a power animal, a lot of people want to get a jaguar, an eagle, but it could be a little ant. And it's not about one is more powerful than another. It's about a power animal, meaning what they represent, what they bring, what their medicine is. Because ants have, you know, they're great to work in organization. They're very skillful. They're, you know, it might be they need that. You know, it could be a great big grizzly bear or an eagle, a jaguar. You know, that's always great, but it could be a little otter. You know, it could be, a butterfly. Whatever it is what this people, it's always perfect, always comes back perfect, I find. Sometimes it's even amazing I'll talk about that later. So you come back with that, and then so you have these pieces that you integrate back and bring back to them and blow into their chakra systems. Each one, spirit will tell me which one, where it needs to go, into what chakra, and they embody that, and they bring that back into their energy body, and they reincorporate. Remember, it's that quanta piece of energy, and they reincorporate all those things together, and they're not separate. They all work in tandem, and then it's up to the client to step back into their power, because to me, that's what it's always about. For someone to step back into their power. They got disempowered, they got to step back into their power. When they have all these together, then they can write, my new contract with spirit is. Because now they're whole again. It's brought them whole again. They have all this information, that and it's always up to them to determine. Now, as the medicine person, you're there to guide the situation, always keep them protected, always working with them, but not to influence them. I'm a real firm believer that their soul, you know, it's very remiss if some healer out there is trying to tell someone else what their soul already knows. This is my belief, mm-hmm. that person knows more than any of us what it is for them. Now, sometimes they need some way to, you might understand that, or you might see a certain way to guide them to still make their own self-discovery. And there's another training that I've had, it's called a Mesa Proxy, that you work deeper to kind of go, it takes quite a bit of time, but it's deeper for them to even go more into finding out what that soul, return soul, means for them. So anyway, so that was kind of maybe not as short as answer as you wanted, but I thought it was important to understand, because what you're talking about is, like I said, there's so many people, and that's totally fine. It sounds like you work with what those animals are, and that's great too, but this is the training that I've had. And I don't say it's the only one. I think there's probably a lot of different ones out there that do it even different ways. Some people I know like to lay side by side with a client, you know, like to be connected that way, you know. I mean, I
think it's fascinating. I want to clarify something, though. You said that there were four chambers. One was grace, one was gifts, but I missed the other two. Would you tell them to me again, please?
Oh, sorry. The chamber of wounds is the first one. Then you go into the chamber of contracts. So I need to know what the wounding is. And then when I go into the, well, now that I know what the wounding is, it's like you walk into a play. When you walk into that chamber, I'll see things going on. You know, maybe I'll see a little one crying in the corner, or I'll see two people arguing. And I go up to them and say, who are you? What are you doing? Who is this? What's going on here? When did this happen? I want to find out information. And I find out information, but I don't want to get wrapped up into the story. Like, I'd be disturbing. You have to be very clean and clear when you're going in there and not getting tied up into the story. But I do want to gather information. I want to gather the facts, if you will. I just want to go in there and get the facts. Okay, this is what happened. Okay, I see. Because this happened, now I want to go into the chamber of contracts. Okay, now this is why they wrote that contract. Why, if I just stay quiet or I just stay out of the way, everything will be okay. Oh, I see that because I see where the wounding happened, you know. Because a lot of times, sometimes clients come to me and they think it's one thing going on and they'll tell me a story about it. But when I go down and see what's going on, it's not even related. It's not even what the true part of what their soul is holding. You know, it's just what they think in their literal mind, but it's not really what the subconscious or the soul part of their, you know, that lower world is the domains of the soul. And so that's always where the truth lies.
And if someone dies, Gary, without having their soul in whole, without having it returned to them, they don't go to a shaman, they don't work on this at all. As a matter of fact, they don't even know they're wounded because they've repressed it so much. And they pass on. What happens?
Good question. What happens? when they cross over and they haven't had any soul recovery in their life here on this earth?
Exactly.
Well, then they get the opportunity to come back again and relive it out. I believe that our soul is crying out. It's so strong. This is the same way it could happen right here in this lifetime, where you have the same relationship, why you get the same person, the same boss, the same, and because your soul wants healing so much, and again, this is always my belief that I speak about, as your soul wants to, it'll keep bringing it up to you, opportunities to heal. So that's why I think we have, we track that same person. We got divorced from this one, we tracked another one just like the last one, or we quit this job and we get the boss just like the last boss that didn't work out. It's because it's going to constantly bring us opportunity to new stages, if you will, you know, like a play. It's going to bring you into a new play until you can figure it out, until you find what it is. Maybe you can find it on your own, you know, but this is typically when a medicine person needs to be brought in because it's bigger than us. You know, it's bigger. Right. We're too close to the situation. It's bigger than us, and we need somebody who's non-attached. I'm not attached to the outcome. What happens? I'm attached to the outcome, maybe as far as I want my client to have healing, but it's up to them.
Right.
You know, it's up to them. If I'm doing them a true service, then I have to hold that sacred space, and it's such a blessing to be a sacred witness in someone's healing that I have to hold that space, I think, in a very clean and clear way for them to discover themselves. Because what a disservice it would be for me to tell them everything. Tell them, you know, okay, this is going to happen. Like, they have to find it. They know. We all know deep down. We all know when something resonates with us as truth and when it's like, I don't know about that. It doesn't feel so good.
That's true. Okay, can I ask another question about energy medicine? What's the difference? Would you explain the difference to our audience between energy medicine and soul retrieval?
It's wrapped under the same umbrella, I think. Energy medicine, to me, is just, I believe it's what's integrated now with other therapies. I think, you know, Western medicine has its place. I'm not a, you know, I'm, to me, I'm going to go holistically before I go Western medicine, but I can't rule out Western medicine. There's some great things going on out there, but I'm going to look for it holistically first, and that's where energy medicine is, because everything's energy. The medicine person is looking for they're looking at the luminous energy field, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is energy, that aura, if you will. You've seen it depicted in the Bible when you see when you see the big gold halo around. You know, this is like the aura, the energy body, and then from there we shift at the level of the soul, and then everything's energy, and then you got to go at the soul level. Then your mind and body are going to follow, because you can't heal it the other way. I don't think you have to take it up to the next level. So if someone's holding on something mentally, literally, you have to take it to the next level to shift it at the level of the soul. Then their mind's going to shift if they keep engaging. And Albert Einstein said, you know, you can't solve a problem at the same level it was created. And so this is the same premise, that if you created it in your mind, then you can't keep tossing it back and forth and really expect, I guess my point is, I've seen people who've been in psychotherapy, and I'm sure psychotherapy is great, or other kind of therapy where you talk therapy, but I've seen bigger shifts in 1, 2, 3 sessions than people who've been in therapy for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. Because we're working at the level of the soul. And again, it's always about that person stepping in, you know.
Wonderful.
Stepping into their power.
Now, what do you think, when it comes to ceremony and ritual, how does that affect a person's life? What's important about ceremony?
Well, ceremony, and I spent a lot of time in ceremony. I actually was just fortunate to be invited to a Lwampi ceremony, which is a Native American ceremony, very, very sacred. I won't go into all the details of it, but it was very, very important, very healing. A fire ceremony, lighting a candle could be a ceremony. You know, to me, you know, going out in your garden and planting flowers can be a ceremony. It doesn't have to be a real esoteric type thing. But ceremony takes it to the level of our soul. And if we're shifting at the energy, you mentioned about energy medicine, so if you're shifting at energy, and that's tied into those two pieces, the energy and the soul, you have to go to ceremony. Ceremony is that place where we can sit and not speak, you know, or we sit and we just, the drum speaks to us, you know. It has its own language, the soul, right? Drums, you know, the rattles, fire, and these places that it's very sacred, I know, in all indigenous cultures to go back to ceremony. I think that's part of the problem we've had in our challenge in Western culture, is that we lost ceremony. We lost rites of passage for children. You know, they get confused. You know, there's a lot of teenagers. They don't know going from a young boy, their hormones, to a young man. You know, many indigenous cultures had these rites of passage that said, hey, here you are. That's why, hence, I took my son on that trip to say, listen, yeah, you're becoming a man now. It's kind of funny because I remember I was telling him that story. I said, Dylan, you know, you're becoming a man now. And the next morning he woke up after this big ceremony we had, and he said, Dad, he goes, I'm a man now, you know, today. I said, good. I see you a man? He said, yeah. I said, you sure? And he said, yes, Dad. Today I'm a man. I said, okay, so then pick up your clothes, pick up your towel. I said, welcome to manhood and clean out the room. We were just kind of joking.
My son's name is Dylan, too.
Oh, really? That's sweet. But, so I think this ceremony, I think, is very important, and I'm a big, big proponent of ceremony. And again, for those of your people listening, it could be simple as lighting a candle. It could be, sitting in meditation in a little place, but meditation could be taking a walk. Some people, you know, in a way for me, I like to golf. Golf's kind of like a meditation for me. I'm out in nature and I'm chasing this little white ball, but I don't care if I get score 110 or 50 or, well, not 50, I couldn't, but, you know, if I get 80, I'd be elated. But it's more about being in that place where you're just of no mind chatter. That's a meditation. And ceremony can be done many, many different ways. But yes, it's very, very important. And you'll find that all these cultures, they fought so hard, especially I know the Native Americans, I talked to them a lot about that, about how they had to fight. You know, our government treated them terribly, and that they, some of them were, I don't know if you knew this, just up into 1970, 1979, they were still going into, they were a law, you could still go into a family, a native family, and take their children and take them out and put them into boarding school. Without the, that was the law, that they were allowed to do that. Yes, it's just crazy. It's like thinking, you know, you think it's like happened in the 1800s. No, it still happened just in the 70s. And that's when I was in high school. So, you know, they try to keep them away from the ceremony, cut their hair, make them be fit into the, you know, the mold. And they fought hard. They, you know, they fought very hard to hold on to their ceremonies. Actually, the gentleman I go on the trip with to South Dakota, Kevin Locke, his mother was a big proponent to gain their rights back. She worked a lot with the United States government, and she was Patricia Locke was her name, an amazing woman. I read a book on her, and an amazing woman, and she fought hard for the Indian rights. And it was, you know, into, you know, like I said, the 70s, 80s. I mean, it's amazing that you think we're, you know, surpassed that, you know. But it's so important, and thank God they held on to these rights about living in balance and harmony with the earth, and you know, living in right relationship. And, you know, we got out of that, and we can see that the earth is correcting itself. It needs to, and thank God this shift has happened, where a lot of people, you know, for, you know, yourselves included, you know, doing a radio show that helps to bring more consciousness out into the world.
Thank you. Tell me something about Medicine Way University.
Well, Medicine Way University is what my wife and I created together, and we just want to kind of make it a place where it's authentic, you know, authentic for people to have their experience. I believe everything is people's direct revelation, and that we just try and, in that Medicine Way University, hold a container for people to do that. So what does that mean? Well, in that we have a medicine wheel training, which we have one coming up in April. It's a one-year training that people go around the medicine wheel. It's typically, it's kind of woven, it's a little bit Andean medicine, it's a little bit with some Native American woven in there, but basically what it is you go around the wheel, each direction you're working a body of processes to help you heal and to be more in power. You know, some of the wisdom keepers talk about that we walk around as wounded healers until we take our own journey around the medicine wheel. So even with the best intentions, we have to transform, and this medicine wheel helps you transform old wounds into places of power. And when I say power, it's not power to be power over somebody, but power that where you're stepping in your power and you're, you know, being a servant, I believe, onto others, you know, and in a good way, you know, being of service, I should say. And we need to be really clean. Like I said, when I'm working with a client, I can't, if I didn't, I feel very strongly, if I didn't go through my own healing process, that I'm going to be projecting my wounded places of myself onto others. And you see this sometimes when people, and I mentioned this to some of my students, that if somebody's crying, for example, if I'm in a session with somebody and they start crying, if you're wounded, then you're going to want to go right up and hug them and start making them try and fix them and make them feel better. And why? Because it triggered an energetic cord in yourself where you're still wounded. Okay? And I'm not saying to be insensitive to somebody, but what I'm saying is if I go hug somebody right away, that I just interrupted their healing process. Because maybe that's just what they needed, to have a good cry and to let that go. And sometimes just to sit as a sacred witness and let them process is the most beautiful thing. But you have to do that, and I shouldn't say sometimes, it always is a beautiful thing, but you have to be very clean in yourself, not to be pulled into it. And typically we'll be pulled into situations, you know, when we have some kind of unhealed part of ourself or a shadow part of ourself that shows up. I'm not saying a hug's not appropriate at times, but certainly not during somebody's healing process. I don't believe, you know. I believe.
I know exactly what you're saying. I think the way that I would explain it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if you're in a situation where you need to remain at a spiritual level that can flow a certain love and clean vibration down to the person that's struggling. And by down, I mean if they're going through a lower vibrational issue, in other words, they're crying or they're struggling and they're trying to put themselves back together, they're trying to heal, and you bring yourself down there to that vibrational level, there's no way you can help anymore because you're at the same level as they are. Do you see what I mean? It's like your baby running in and falling and ripping his knee open and you getting down on the floor and crying with him instead of picking him up and putting a Band-Aid on and saying, you're going to be okay, you know. It's a process. Your body heals itself and you send him out the door. If you don't stay in that clear place and you let yourself feel the same emotions as the person you're trying to help, you've lost it.
Oh, I think I think we have to sit in that place of non-attachment and hold that space. You're holding that container. Someone's coming, and I'll tell you another thing. I'm very adamant about. I don't look at somebody as wounded when they come through. I always see them already healed, because if I have to, I believe that if they're coming here for healing, I have to already see them. If I don't see them healed, how are they going to reflect that to themselves?
That's so beautiful. I like that.
So I hold that place that, it's just a rediscovering or shifting of energy, or sometimes it can be very in-depth, as you know, I'm sure, in session work. I mean, it could be cord cutting. There could be entities, liquid or crystallized energies. I mean, it's very in-depth. And I know in some of my training I had some of this stuff if my friends, I came from a very middle or lower middle class family that was very strong and loving, very tight family, but very middle of the road type thinking. And when I first started doing some of the training, I was like, wow, this is, my friends walked in, they probably take me out in a straitjacket,
mm-hmm.
seeing, watching us doing these certain things. And then I realized, but I had to honor what was happening for me, the experiences, saying, yeah, mm-hmm. this is really happening, this is true. Or like when you talk to spirits, there is communication on the other side.
Yeah.
Some people.
Well, thank you for being on the show, Carrie. It's always great to have you, and I always enjoy having Pam on for doing the interviewing and everything like that. So thank you, Pamela, for adding your energy to the show this evening. Carrie, before we sign off, can you go ahead and just give out your website again?
Yes, thank you. MedicineWindWindWarrior.com. And what we have coming up right down the pipe, I'll tell you quickly, is if somebody's here in Florida listening, we have actually Kevin happens. He travels all over the world. He's in town. We're doing a new moon fire. We just decided today, so it's not posted yet, but it will be tomorrow morning. We're doing a new moon ceremony, fire ceremony. Kevin's going to come down and play his flute and tell some stories and sing. He's an amazing singer of Lakota songs. And we're going to do that. And then we have the March 23rd. And then I have the Moonai Ki, which is the 9 Shamanic Rites of Initiation, which is a beautiful class coming up in March 15, 16, 17. And then the Medicine Wheel in April. And then, of course, the two retreats that are really close to my heart is Peru, August 4th through the 15th. And then South Dakota, July 13th through the 20th. And then there's stuff we throw on and off. So thank you for the opportunity to speak and to your listeners. And God bless you guys for everything you're doing and for your families. And we say a prayer for you and a blessing that, your show continues to grow and get stronger and stronger.
Thanks a lot, Carrie. For the listeners who have been on, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio with Mark Ross and my co-host Pamela Tor. And you can find out more about our radio shows and our guests and other radio shows that are launching on the Spiritual Connections radio umbrella at our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Good night and God bless and lots of love to everybody. Good night, everybody. Good night, Carrie. Good night, Pamela.
Good night, guys. Many blessings.
Bye-bye.